Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode where we are inviting back a recent guest, the amazing Emily Johnson-Vay, to talk about a very specific subject. Now, if you want to learn more about Emily, please go back and visit episode 146 and listen to that, because today we're just going to dive straight in. So first things first, Emily, always a pleasure and thanks so much for hanging out with us again so quickly here at ATA.
I can't wait to do it again. I'm thinking within the next 24 hours again.
So just a bit of background information. The last time me and Emily connected was less than 24 hours ago when we did a live panel discussion for our ATA members. So there's lots of Emily Johnson-Vay in my life. I'm trying to convince her to move her family to New Zealand. She's not quite there yet, but she said she'll come visit soon. So we're excited about that. So here's part of the story anyway behind this episode today. Towards the start of May this year, 2021, I posted something in our Animal Training Academy members-only Facebook group that seemingly really hit on something influencing many members of our community. And I'm going to read aloud that post now. It went like this. Yo, Riffle Makers, are you feeling overwhelmed? I actually already know the answer to this question, though, for some of you, as some of you have communicated directly to me that you are. My understanding is that a part of this is due to the large quantity of online learning opportunities that have become available in the last 12 to 18 months due to the global situation. What do we watch? When do we watch it? What is the opportunity cost of consuming the, air quote, wrong content? Consequently, I thought I would share this post to hopefully have a helpful conversation about this. This post has also been inspired by a conversation I had with the amazing, yours truly, Emily Johnson-Vay, yesterday, where she shared with me some of her strategies to coordinate her own content consumption. And also inspired by a toot from the fantastic Pavey K, where she shared a new strategy she is implementing. And finally, inspired by my own lack of strategy to do this myself. So what about you, the individual ripple maker? What are your thoughts here? How are you feeling? Do you have a strategy? And how might I, Ryan Cartledge and ATA, help? So that was the post. And the comments exploded with people sharing that this was something they struggled with. As I mentioned in the post, it was inspired by Emily sharing with me her strategy. So I think that's a really good place for this conversation to possibly start today. Emily, specifically, you shared with me how you approach consuming content from a virtual conference. Can you share this strategy with us?
Yeah, for sure. So online conferencing, it's all the rage right now, and there are so many conferences. And my thoughts about what a conference is, actually, it leads all the way back to when we actually did real life conferences, because I'm teaching at a lot of these conferences. And that means that Eva and I are, Eva Bertelsen, that I have Talk Momentum together with, we're on the floor somewhere preparing our own lectures. And that means that I have content to go back to after the conference. So already many years ago, I decided that I needed a way to make sure that the content that I wanted to watch was actually something that I did get around to watching. And this then became glaringly obvious with all the online conferences. So what I do is that I make a list of which are the lectures that I really want to see and get some kind of inspiration or feedback or input from. And then I make sure to watch them and I make them in a priority order. And I have different orders. It could be for my own training. It could be from my clients. It can be for curiosity. So I have like different lists. And while I'm watching them, I take notes and I like post-it. So for one lecture, I will have like a big paper and I put all the post-it notes on it. And then I will actually go back and revise these post-it notes in a different section of my learning from this conference. And this might all sound like really, really, wow, it must take a lot of time. But it's not the case that I will be watching everything. I actually do make a selection. And the reason I think that I do not feel overwhelmed is one of the things that I was thinking of when I read all these comments is that we need to... So I'm old. When I started out with animal training, there wasn't that much information. And we need to realize that we are overwhelmed from abundance. We are overwhelmed from abundance. There is so much information out there. And that is a good thing. When I started out, we had books. That was kind of it. There was no, the internet was young. So for me, it's still a luxury to have all this at my fingertips. I can touch it. I can take it in. So a priority list, making sure that when this conference, when I say that I am going to go to Clicker Expo, that I say that I'm going to do the Lemonade Conference, that I make sure to make time in my calendar following this conference where I am going to go through this priority list. And I also make time for the unexpected. So I create a catch-up period. Let's just boil this down. Priority, not getting to watch everything. Having for my own training, for my clients, curiosity. Doing all these notes on post-its, and then I can go back and I can kind of rearrange all these post-its so that they make sense to me and that the things that popped out to me can pop up in an order that kind of fits my thinking. And then I have my catch-up time period for things that I never got around to. So right now I'm in my catch-up period for the Lemonade Conference, for example. So that's what I do.
So making a list, using your post-its, and then scheduling time to ensure that once the conference is finished, you know that next week between 12 and 2, you're going to sit down and watch some of these presentations that you've highlighted. Now, I am in the position in June 2021 where I could not explain to someone how I operated in 2020 without scheduling. I have no idea. And that's something that Veronica Battelli from DogBiz has taught me this year. And in the ATA group and also on my personal social media, I posted about this and shared a screenshot of my schedule. And once again, it got a surprising for me at the time amount of feedback that people were inspired by this. And even now, after we get off this call, I have personal emails from members asking me about this kind of stuff months later. What might you suggest for people who were like 2020 Ryan, who know what the word scheduling means but haven't started that process yet? Because we can say, hey, go schedule it for the next week, but if you don't have a process already in place, like how does one get started on that?
We touched on this last night, didn't we, building your own behavior and changing your own habits. And I think Josephine just posted a really good post on it today with her making sure that you lower criteria. If you never scheduled anything in your life, then thinking that you're going to plan out the rest of the year is probably not going to happen, is it? We all know that we need to start with the behavior that's already there. So what do you have? what is in your repertoire that has anything to do with scheduling, and can you start from there? First of all, that's building the actual scheduling behavior, and that's kind of a daunting task and a big task. But if you start really small, then you can build your scheduling behavior. But if we tie this directly to the online conferences, maybe you can take a look at the next 2 days and see, is there any time at all that you can lock away to take out one of these presentations that you've been wanting to see? Also, what does it mean to you to this is a, like of a sidetrack, Brian, but what does it mean to take in one of the conferences? Does it mean that you have to sit in front of your laptop and kind of look at the screen? Or can you listen to the presentation whilst you're doing something else, but having pen and paper close to you? I often listen to presentations while I am folding laundry. Moving my hand while I listen makes it easier for me to concentrate, and then I can make notes on a pad at the same time. So I'm not always just sitting there. So maybe also take a little spin around, what does it mean take in the presentation? What are your different options? Can you listen in your car when you're driving somewhere? Can you do household chores while you're listening? Do you want to actually, instead of watching Netflix, watch a presentation? Do you realize that that is an option? You can skip whatever show you're watching right now and actually watch a presentation. I had that discussion with a friend just the other day, and she was like, I never thought of that. And I was like, it's possible. So what does it look like when you listen to the presentation? And what do you have up close now, maybe in the next couple of days, where you can carve out some time to do it? Don't make it, it's not rocket science. Just find a little spot. And maybe don't listen to the whole thing. What do you say about that, Ryan? How are you about splitting things?
So I have, when I want to watch some content that is relevant to something that I'm doing, I'm training this behavior. This trainer did a presentation on this specific behavior. I have already in my calendar scheduled training time. Training to me is behavior feedback revision. So part of that is the planning stage. So training doesn't necessarily mean being in front of my learner with some kibble and shaping behavior. It can also mean setting the antecedents up, which is knowledge for me. And
So what did you just say that training is for you? You said it is
setting the antecedents up.
Before you said not something about revision, training,
behavior feedback revision, which is Susan's offering, I think. Behavior, 600 mm-hmm. million years old, unique for each individual or something.
There you go. And don't you think that this is part of a problem? What is an online conference? Is it just the time of the weekend that we don't make time for the rest of it, the revision and the feedback? Is that part of the overwhelm? What does learning look like? What is the definition of learning? It's a change in behavior over time.
So many thoughts right now. But yes, go on.
So I think this might be part of the problem. When you say that, 2020 Ryan didn't schedule. Maybe 2020 Ryan didn't think about what is an online conference. I mean, is it just that Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Or, I mean, did you really think at any time in your head that you're going to watch all those presentations during Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and that was going to be the be all and end all of that? I think that sometimes I've gone to conferences and kind of thought that. But what about the revision? What about the implementation? When is that going to take place? So I'm guessing this is the dissonance. Don't you think, Ryan? You sign up and you devoted time and you devoted money, but then the what you get out of it perhaps always isn't as big as it could have been because of the lack of revision.
Well, like I said, so many thoughts. people in the Animal Training Academy community, primarily professionals training clients that are not professionals. Part of their journey over the last wee while, and part of what they do is creating content as well. I think there's an opportunity for learning. Like if you choose a subject, let's say I'm going to make a presentation on jackpots. What is a jackpot? What is this word jackpot we keep saying? What is pre-mac? What is reinforcement strategies? And you do a deep dive into that yourself, trying to package all of the content into something to share. Like there's so much learning there. So for me, I get to, 24 hours ago, jump on with you, Teresa McEwen, Sean Pogson, Josephine, Katja Peterson, and talk about positive reinforcement parenting. Less than 24 hours later, we get to jump on and do this. Like I never not have opportunities to learn, like just from doing my job. So So for me, online conferences, I can't speak to my own experience here because I don't really lack opportunities to gain new knowledge. I mean, I'm always whacked in the face with unexpected things that change my life forever. I can only speak to others, but I also know others in that post were saying that part of their overwhelm wasn't just what they've missed, but their own life, and part of that was putting conference courses together. So I think there's a lot of value in that. Can you repeat the question? I'm passion talking, or am I? What was the term
you said? You're test talking whilst passion talking, which is not amazing. I think my question was, what is your take on splitting things? So you really want to watch this presentation, and it's a 90-minute presentation, and you now have 30 minutes.
Yep. So I will, so generally speaking, if I'm watching something that specifically I want to absorb, I will sit at my desk and watch it. I think some presentations are more aligned with listening. If there's lots of videos of someone actually training an animal, it makes listening in the car a little bit more challenging. And so if it is something I'll listen to in the car, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'll be listening on dog walks in the car while I'm cleaning the dishes and leveraging those moments. But then I'll just jot down the time I get to, and then I'll pick it up from again there in my next already scheduled training slot in my calendar.
Yeah.
But that's how I manage that.
Yeah. But that means that we're back again to actually having those scheduled slots. Because otherwise you're going to be watching those 30 minutes of that presentation and then nothing. Because you're never going to get around to that other half. So again, I think this is like when people say stuff about animal training, like... do I always have to carry treats, blah, 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 et cetera. Not scheduling is like just a thing. Is it, I'm test talking. Could this be that this is just something that we kind of have to create a system for, whatever that looks for the individual? But it perhaps it isn't really a choice. But your system can look whatever you need it to look, and all systems are going to be different. When it comes to our systems, another kind of system, your training system, something that I'm thinking about when it comes to all the online conferences, especially the ones that are more hands-on, more directed at your training directly, less concept-y and more like training related. So sometimes, especially before when I was teaching in real life seminars, I could see that somebody really enjoyed going to classes for different instructors, which is absolutely a good thing. But I could also see that with each new piece of input, they took in a new direction, which wasn't so easy for their learner because there was a lack of system. So to take an agility example, for example, you know, handling fragility, how you get your dog to move around the course. If one trainer tells you that you need to drop your shoulder closest to your dog to kind of pre-cue a sharp turn towards you, what's called a front cross, but another teacher tells you that that motion is done with your outside shoulder, and if you 1 week can do the first thing and the next week can do the second thing, your dog is probably going to just run all over the place. And sometimes I feel that if we just take classes or listen to things and we don't really make it our own and try it against our system before we involve our learners, then that we can get some overwhelm from that as well. That was one of the points that I was thinking about when reading some of the comments to the post. And there again, it's how do you try and test something against your system? Well, that means that you need to know what your system is like in the first case. And this, again, is a question about what does it look like? Do you know how you move around your learner, whichever kind of learner it is, in whatever kind of situation? Do you know what it means if you do this or this? And I think that is a valid thought to think about when you take in a lot of content. As you say, we're always learning, but what does it look like on the output side of all that learning?
Yeah, well, it was something that I was saying to Teresa when we caught up last week. I said, I really want to do tag certifications, but it's a resource problem. And she said, oh, let's have a conversation. And I said, it's not money, it's time. Like, I don't, like, I'm learning from Veronica Bertelli right now, like, that I can't take on anything else. Like, that is, I have to put into practice the things that I'm learning. And so that is enough for me. That is an approximation. Yeah. That's enough for me. Having so many opportunities, I totally agree. And I think it was maybe Stuart in that post that said that he watches something and then sees something else, like he just explained with agility, and the dog gets confused. And someone else said that they have a specific strategy where they watch something and then they will intentionally go and put it into practice. I do the same. I learned from Sean Will in ATA about constructional affection. I didn't really see a huge need for it, but I had some training time, so I jumped in and got my hands dirty and felt what it was like. And acknowledging I was doing that, I wasn't going to try anything else at that point in time. That's my strategy. It works well for me, but I know many others were posting in that post saying, I've got to limit how many courses I buy, but in the time since this post has gone up, I've already brought two more. So there's lots of squirrels and shiny things.
Yes. And a new start is always appealing. A new start for something is always appealing. The finished run is not always as sexy. And I was thinking about that, what you just said about buying a lot of things and having this rule of not buying more and then breaking it over and over and over again. I don't know about you, but things that I do not succeed in doing, then I will also something too, because I'm setting myself up to fail. And I wouldn't do that to my learner, and I'm not going to do that to myself. So if I am buying all this, then let's just say, get rid of the rule of not buying more and look at what do you want it to look like? And we all know about behavior, then approximate that instead of making yourself a bit sad about your constant buying of stuff that you then don't digest. I think that somebody said something about creating some kind of online library so that you don't double buy things, because there were some posts about that, but they've actually kind of bought almost the same thing like twice because you haven't gotten around to watch the first thing, but it sounded really interesting the first time and it sounded just as interesting the second time and they bought the same thing. So I think that could be a thing for me. I don't want to use an Excel document because I hate Excel. So maybe if I say that I have to create an online library, then I would be less likely to just buy more things. But on the other hand, then I'm working under an R- contingency and I don't want to do that. So I don't know. What do you think about this rule of not buying more? Do you think it's doing us any favor, Faders?
I want to jump to a offering, and I haven't asked ATA's members permission to share their names and stuff in here, but I'm doing it with the trust that it's okay. I apologize, I'm crossing lines, but with that said, let's cut names out for now. And someone shared that they have a strategy where they will divide the cost of the course or the conference by the number of presentations and realize it's a bargain. And this person, who's awesome, had a great metaphor for this. She said, even if you end up watching half the presentations, it's sort of like going out in an all-you-can-eat buffet. You can feel like you have had a good meal and your money's worth it without eating everything. And I think kind of framing that like, you've spent $300, but if you look at $300 divided by half of the presentations, if you're able to create a system and schedule those in, then it's still a bargain. It's still a good buffet. You leave with a full stomach.
That is a really, really good point of taking away the feeling of I just spent all this money. It's still actually a bargain, as you said. There's a lot of presentations for that price, and you have them at your fingertips. So now all you need to do is schedule time to actually watch them. And even if you only get through half of them, it's still a bargain. I like that. It takes away some of the pressure, I think. I had a thought regarding this thought about it being easier with the in real life conferences and why it's easier with those. Easier being operationalized as actually watching the presentations and actually taking something away from them. And it's, first of all, that you're taking time out from life because you travel somewhere to be somewhere and you're in this environment. It's like the immersion into the conference and also the opportunity to chat about key points and ask questions and ponder what you've learned. And I think that perhaps instead of feeling sad about not being able to go in real life, perhaps look at those points and see what can you replicate, but at home basis. I actually had a friend, she'd go to their summer house or rented a hotel room for the conferences to have the time taken out of her life to still like spend time with herself and spend time with her learning. And maybe that is a possibility when you're not traveling as much. But what does it look like? What is the point that you want to take away from the whole thing? And I also think that, I mean, look at Clicker Expo this year. How many people got a chance to go to Clicker Expo that can't come because it's in North America? Like Ryan, who's waving his hand at me. And I think that, I mean, also kind of figure out that that is actually a good thing, because a bit of the discussion here went around on how much we miss the in real life possibilities. And of course we do, because it's getting together is wonderful. But there are upsides to the online versions as well. And I hope that we're going to be keeping both as we maybe ease out of the pandemic.
And I found it interesting that people who identify with the label introvert were expressing how much they missed some of the reinforcers you talked about there, or also the removal of all of the cues that are in your home environment, which are competing with your behavior of trying to watch and consume the content material. Also, I think someone mentioned sitting in the hotel room by themselves, like just that cue. Did the lack of cues in a hotel room. The cues for me would be like, relax, check out the mini fridge.
Yeah.
Home for us at the moment with a 14-month-old and animals and constantly changing schedule and lack of sleep and poor eating routines. the cues are so different. Like, it's hard to kind of get into that space.
It is. And I mean, I've got three kids and a husband and two dogs. And if I'm home, there's always something competing for my attention. And I don't think I have complete stimulus control over everything all the time. And so for me to travel up to Eva's place, for example, and do things, then I get into that like flow of things where I can only think about that. And that is a rare treat for me. And of course, I miss that. But there are ways. There's still ways around it. And I think that, I'll share that just before we went on this call, my laptop died. I'm definitely going to moan and complain about that for a little bit. But then I have to do something about it. And I think the online conferences versus the in real life conferences is a little bit of the same thing. We can moan about our lack of reinforces from the social connection we get. But right now, it hasn't been available. So let's do something with what we have instead. I was also thinking, I think somebody said this in the comments, or it's a note I made myself. I do not know. Somebody might have been really smart. But one thing that we really need to do for ourselves is a done for the day list. If you're trying to get round through your conference material, I mean, we probably have a big backlog, or you have like this entire conference. So this is like when you were a student, you could always do more, but just decide there is a point at where you are done for the day, so that you feel that you've done what you were supposed to do, and you don't think about the backlog. You don't think about the fact that you have 25 more presentations to get through or whatever. I think that is really important. Otherwise, we're going to feel that lack of, we're still going to feel kind of, I have all this to go through. And it gets into kind of a scarcity mindset instead of an abundance mindset, if that makes sense.
It does. And the acronym FOMO was used in the comment section of that post. And I think I'm always reminded, like, these are great problems to have. Like, I have too many things to watch. Like, oh no. You know, like, there's some horrible things happening on this planet and some really challenging locations to live in, where people don't even have access probably to computers and internets and learning opportunities and even the time in the day to kind of schedule time to learn rather than to survive. So, like, I kind of always put it in perspective, like, okay, yeah, I'm stressed and tired, but like, oh my God, look at my house and my baby and this safe environment and these streets. I feel like bit of an a-hole saying that, because like, I don't want to disrespect that the fact that these are feelings. Like, you feel like in your chest and in your head and in your breathing these things, and reflecting on what we have and abundance mindset and stuff doesn't always just change that it feels unpleasant for the individual. I don't mean by saying any of this to disrespect that in any way.
No, but for sure, Ryan, we need to be able to keep two tracks in our heads at the same time, meaning we need to kind of just accept what you just said, because that is true, and we feel. That is, I mean, the one thing doesn't cancel out the other thing, and it's not a question of disrespect. But I think that we need to be able to hold both thoughts in our head at the same time, in a sense. And I think the reframe is something that we need to work on our individual level. Question, do you get FOMO if your time is filled with stuff you love? What is FOMO?
I don't really, I had FOMO from Clicker Expo. Like, I'm one of the people that was stoked to go to Clicker Expo this year. And it's one of the few conferences I attempted to participate. Summer had different ideas, but I've got photos from my phone. I was there. I can put that on a t-shirt. But I didn't get to absorb as much as I would have liked to have live. But that's okay. I've got a baby. I was having a great time hanging out with my child. And so, can you rephrase the question? I know it's about FOMO, but I want to make sure that I don't go wildly off track here.
Do you get FOMO if time is filled with stuff you love? What is FOMO? Fear of missing out. What is that? I mean, if we look at it, if we do an analysis of what's actually going on, is it a positive reinforcement contingency, or is it a negative reinforcement contingency, or is it something else?
I don't think that, to answer your first question, I'm sure I experience it, but it's not easily coming to me, experiences of it. Apart from Clicker Expo, where the environments from social media is consistently reminding me that I'm going to do. I don't know if there's many other examples where, if I stayed off social media, I'd be fine.
If you didn't know what was going on, then of course it's not going to compete with whatever you're doing right now. But I think I've been thinking a little bit about it, because when I'm test talking and I don't have.
Can you explain what test talking is? Because people might.
Well, test talking means that I haven't really thought about this yet, and I might change my way halfway through. But the words need to come out. I need to hear myself saying them, and you might say something clever back to me so that I can reframe and restruct whatever I was thinking.
Everything I say is test talking.
Well, I have a tendency to sound really, really sure about myself sometimes. My husband always jokes about that, and he's like, he'll pay me back with the same way of saying something about something technical, and I don't know that he's just fibbing with me, and it gets interesting. But what I was saying was that sometimes I feel that when I've made a decision to do something and it's more of an escape avoidance contingency going on, and then something else shows up that I actually really would like to do, that's the time where I feel FOMO. So the problem is not in that situation. The problem is beforehand. Why am I doing the thing I am doing, the one that I think is in an escape avoidance contingency? Why is that even on? Why is that in my calendar? Why am I doing that thing? It has nothing to do with the other thing showing up. It's how I allocated my time from the beginning. What's going on there?
Oh my God.
Do you see what I mean?
I was test thinking, as you're saying, and I realized I've stopped test listening, and now I'm test thinking.
We can test whatever. But, I mean, this is I'm trying to figure out this situation. Sometimes when you do something because you think you have to, or something kind of prompted you and you are afraid that if you don't get on it now, then somebody else is going to. So your intentions are a bit muddled. What you're working for is a bit muddled. And then something else shows up, a great opportunity shows up, something that you would actually like to do. Then FOMO, of course, is going to bite you in the ass, because you would actually really like to do that second thing. If I'm really sure about that very first thing, it doesn't feel that pang of, like you just said, you can feel it in your chest, you can feel it in your head. That pang isn't as big. Can you read me at all?
I have to apologize to you and to our ATA audience. I have had a sleepless wife, and I've had a cat putting her bum in my face, and a sleepless wife saying, can you help me right now? Competing in the present moment, which is kind of relevant because we're talking about things competing.
Yeah.
But my apology is my attention in the moment was just pulled away momentarily from the recording.
And I think I also might have been rambling a little bit. So we're fine with that one. But I'm just test talking. But I think that if you experience a lot of FOMO, perhaps look at the schedule. Don't look at what came in, but look at what was already in your on your schedule. Were you spending your time the way that you would have liked to in the first place?
What it makes me think about, which may be completely unrelated, is another post. this is one thing I love about ATA. Like these things aren't necessarily their behavior. They're not necessarily what one might think about as content for an animal training community. But we're all humans, so we're all struggling with these things. And so another one was just how do we say no to things? And I think that is where FOMO can hit as well. That is another space that FOMO can hit as well. Part of that, part of a strategy that someone shared with me that I haven't yet implemented but made a lot of sense is when you say no to something, go to that space in that calendar where that thing would have been and put a post-it there. And then when that time comes, yes, celebrate what you're doing instead.
Yes.
That's from Veronica Bertelli, like, shared that with me.
I love that. It's like there is a saying, I think, that every time you say no, you're saying yes to something else.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I kind of like that. I also like the fact that no is a complete sentence.
No is a complete sentence. That's cool.
I do not need to explain. I do not need to be worthy about something. If it's a no, then a kind no is enough. Because most of the times when I get into problems is when my no is followed with a lot of because blah 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 blah, and then I kind of talk myself into a hole, and at the end of it, I'm not feeling really good about it. So no is a complete sentence.
Yeah, and one thing that Kathy Sadeo helped guide my attention to, she sent me an article when I posted that and said, hey, I think you might find this helpful. And in this article, it said, if someone says no to you, say thank you to them. Say thank you for looking after yourself. Mm-hmm. I think FOMO is part of saying no to things. And another thing I wanted to touch on today is guilt. Guilt being part of overwhelm. And I know I mentioned this to you briefly in our Facebook Messenger chats, but part of the reason that I think saying no can be challenging for me has been part of my experience, most definitely. And judging from the comments in the post about saying no, it's part of other people's experiences as well, is you feel guilty for not being able to assist the person that needs help if they come into you at a request to get your help. But guilt's also come in to this overwhelm conversation. People are feeling guilty. People are feeling guilty being part of, for example, Animal Training Academy and not giving as much as they're taking. That's how they frame it. That's not how I see it. That is my interpretation of what I've seen other people say, but it's not how I see it. I don't see people as taking and not giving. I see people as, like my mum asked me to do things and my mum's like, can I do this for you? And I say yes in a single sentence. And sometimes wifey might say, hey, Ryan, I don't think we should overburden your mum too much. She's got a lot going on. And I'm like, mum wants to be a mum.
Yeah.
Like, she wants to help. Like, so saying no, I believe, and I've learned through my life, is probably more detrimental to my mum than saying, yes, help your son and be a mum.
So my best friend and I, one of the things that made us best friends instantly is the clear communication. If I ask her for help with something and she says yes, I don't need to tiptoe around it to go, are you sure? Do you? If she said yes, she had time and she wanted to help me. If she says no, it has nothing to do with her feelings regarding me. It's just that she doesn't have the space for it right then. And she doesn't want to say yes to something she can't deliver on. And so it takes away a lot of those social dances around things. And it actually just makes things a lot easier. And I think that ties in really well with the whole guilt perspective. I hate it when if I've miscommunicated, if I've made somebody think that I am now available for something and then I have to say no. That's one of my harder situations. But saying no in the first place is easier for me because of the fact that I've just been clear and I've been looking out for the fact for me and for the other person by just, I'm not going to deliver what you want anyway. So I'm setting you free to find that somewhere else. And I think that is, if we could get to the point of Isn't this in crucial conversations, Ryan, where we stay on task and it's not about the person, but it's about what's at hand? So if I say no, it has to do with the task and the fact that it doesn't fit in my schedule right now or with my life or whatever. It's not to do with you. If you were to ask me to manage something for ACA, I would have been thrilled that you asked me, and the answer would have been no, because there's no space in my calendar. And it has nothing to do with my feelings for you or the fact that I should move to New Zealand or you should move to Sweden.
So that kind of makes me think about the logic. Like I read what Kathy sent me. She had this concept in there called duck bread. Like if this doesn't excite you the same way it excites a little child giving duck to a bread, and if it creates feelings of guilt in you, then say no. And be grateful that you're saying yes to yourself and looking after yourself. So there's a logic of like, we don't need to feel guilty. This person's going to be better off. We're not going to be able to deliver what we promise. And then there's the actual feeling of guilt as well. It's bringing me back to that. And then the guilt, those actual feelings are part of what people label as overwhelm for themselves. I'm curious if after this conversation, we identify observably for ourselves what those feelings feel like. So I say I burnt out last year, but I don't know that Emily interprets what I'm saying as what actually happened. Like when I burnt out, like I had a panic attack, tears flew from my eyes, I was hyperventilating, I was very blurry in thought. I can explain those things. They are cues for me now. Like when I notice that those behaviors are present in certain contexts, I'm now cued to go do new things. So I'm curious if what can flow out of this conversation is an appreciation of what overwhelm feels like for you as an individual. And we can't answer that because this is your individual experience. But some of those things I just explained might be part of it. For me, it was. I would say I was overwhelmed and I burnt out, right? And that are some of the things. Yeah. And now when I see that, like, it just cues me to start saying no to things. It creates the behavior of no. Like, you've got to kind of create some space here. It cues me to be more vigilant to... Michael Shikashio puts it really well with aggressive dogs, like... Don't light or don't spark a spark next to a full can of gas. Like it's much more likely to explode if the gas bottle's like nearly empty. And so I'm like, okay, cool. Like I've got to really minimize cues from my environment that are going to require significant behavior at the moment. And so I can use them as cues. So I wonder if there's some possibilities to you're nodding your head. What are you thinking? What does this make you think?
For sure, there are possibilities to make these feelings of guilt. What do they look like for the individual? And what can they cue that would be in line with what the individual wants? So I now signed up for a conference, whatever conference. And I've been doing this now for the entire 2020 and the 2021. And as I sign up for the conference, I feel this pang of acceleration, and then it kind of goes into some kind of, but I'm not going to get around to watch all of it. I shouldn't have bought this conference because I look at this backlog, blah, blah, blah. What can I do with that in that second? What can I do to turn that around? And that is going to be, as you just said, individual for all different people. It might be set up a watch party with friends for one of the talks that you haven't watched yet. It might be go through some of the notes that you did, that you took from one of the presentations that you did go through. It might be go train something that you took away from one of the presentations. It might be anything, but actually turn them into an action point of something that you want to do. I think that, don't you think that would change things around?
Yeah, and there's a plethora, and I'll just hazard to say, an infinite number of possibilities about what that might cue for you as an individual. I'm just thinking at the moment what it cues for me is in some situations to do a functional assessment of what's actually going on.
Aren't we boiling down to, like I said in the podcast we did before, like we're talking about this almost on a societal system level of we need to create lives for people where there is space for reflection. And if we don't take it away from the political scene, because we're not going there, and go to the individual scene, then it's like we need to have space for reflection, because all that you just said about how you experienced a burnout and what you're doing with those cues now, if you didn't have time to reflect, you wouldn't have changed anything. You have to find it and you have to do something about it.
I think what a gift that came out of that is I at the time would not have labeled me as having time to reflect on it, but my motivating operations changed. Like it became like the sole focus of my life was avoiding that situation again. So much that I took action that I needed to take a long time ago. But I think the when I say the gift from that was that I will now, you know, to borrow from Shrag, we can listen to the whispers. I'm butchering this comment on the metaphor, I'm sure. Listen to the whispers.
Yeah, and not wait for somebody to scream. Yeah.
Right. So I was screaming then. What it taught me was to listen to the whispers a little bit more before they were being ignored. Not to use an animal training metaphor.
I was having a thought before that I just grasped again when you were saying about feeling guilty about saying no to somebody. Could it be that the story that we are telling ourselves in that situation is a little bit too much about us and our role in the world, how we are kind of the be all and the end all? My mom, you say, that the churchyard, the cemetery is full of, what's the word in English? It's full of people that were really important, that people that were really needed. And the world is still turning. Yet the world is still turning. We are now indispensable people. That's the word I was looking for. The cemetery is full of indispensable people. That's what my mom used to say when I was cracking the whip too hard on something. And for me, it's interesting to me that we are sitting here, two people that had two pretty horrible experiences. Your burnout probably wasn't a happy moment right there and then. And I lost my mom very suddenly 11 years ago. And I changed everything the very same way that you changed things after your burnout. I changed it after losing her. And I've made different choices from that. But wouldn't it be lovely if something horrible doesn't need to happen before you make different choices?
Yeah, absolutely. How do we
set ourselves up for success? Isn't that the question?
So for me, to answer that question from my indispensable, all-important Ryan Cartledge worldview is that it comes down to a couple of things for me in my recent experience. Resources is one of them. Because Ryan Cartledge pre-dadhood, I had a sus, man. I had all the time I wanted. Everything was good. And then suddenly, I was like, oh my God, I have no time.
I love how you remember that. I love how you remember that feeling. I've been a mom for 19 years almost. I do not remember what it felt like I actually do not remember anymore to have all that time. I'm always in awe of people.
It's starting to leave me, but...
Just with a vacant look on his face. I'm having a thought here. When we were saying about setting yourself up for success, so this is a fluffy thought and I'm test talking, but if you think of your life as a pie and the pie is in pieces and each piece represents something, you have the work pie, you have the family pie, you have your love life pie, you have your friends pie, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that the fact is that we kind of set ourselves up for success in one or two pieces, but not in the other ones, and we let things fall by the wayside?
Well, yes and no, and it comes down to resources. So that first things first is a concept that's been shared on the Animal Training Academy podcast show recently in our 7 Habits of Highly Effective People episode, where the concept, Ryan's interpretation of the concepts of first things first is identify five to seven areas in your life that are areas where you want to put your resources first. You want to work on those areas first: yourself, your family, your children, your self-care time. And that's what I implemented for years. I used to send my wife an email once a week with goals in my 7 areas. One of them was being a better husband. She loved receiving her emails. And that's how I've managed everything up until Summer being born. And then after that, I was like, the strategy that I've leant on my entire life, now I do not have the resources to manage that. So I think about the pie as well. But I think what another thing that's come out of that situation for me is to ask for help.
Yeah.
And one of my mentors and one of my best friends, Nick Bishop, says resourcefulness is our ultimate resource. The concept of hiring someone within our budget when first suggested to me in December was unattainable at initial thought, but we made it happen within, and we purchased the computer required for the job. And we paid the lawyer fees to get the contract written up. We just had to do things differently and be resourceful with what we've had. Help changed everything and gave us back what we lost.
Yeah, there you go. And resourcefulness, again, isn't this what we're talking about when we're talking about this growth mindset and when we're talking about very labely grit? Isn't that all what we're looking for is resourcefulness? And again, there are different ways to describe it of how to reach that. And I'm still saying that it all has to do with knowing how to access the next reinforcer. And it might not be in the track you were on from the beginning. You might need to change tracks, but you still know that there are reinforcers to be accessed. And as long as you do know that, resourcefulness is a label I can use.
And I think something we were talking about in our panel discussion yesterday has been really helpful for me, and something that I'm cued by as well when I feel increased heart rates, sweaty palms, shallow breathing, is Sarah Owings' offering of her rubric, and the ATA twisted modified version of that is to reflect on what just happened and celebrate. And as we do with our animals, look for what just happened that you liked. What do you want to repeat? There's always something there. Find the reinforceable behavior. You'll do it with your dog. It's challenging her to, I'm celebrating the approximation of potentially making up a word just then. It's challenging her to do it with yourself. Mm-hmm. But I've built a muscle in doing that over the years that really serves me now. The other consideration and the other part of the behavior that is cued by these internal feelings I have is to ask, what is one small change I can make moving forward? Or to frame it in an ATA words, what is one small change I can make to build on this awesome source for next time? And then do the reinforceable behavior and make that small adjustment.
Yes. And to phrase it like Eva and I usually do, it's like mistake handling. We often talk about that from like a dog training perspective, but it's the same with ourselves. If a mistake just happened, it just happened. There's no point to turn into Cher and start singing, if I could turn back time, because the mistake just happened, move on. And make sure not to add insult to injury. Get to the next reinforceable behavior. Move on. And I think that's one of the things that is most, that we really need to think about. What does that look like in a human setting? What does it look like in a setting with just myself? What does it look like in a setting with a business partner or with my husband, when we do not dwell on the mistake, but we move to the next reinforceable behavior? And then, of course, if the mistake is something that needs to be fixed, then we build that behavior, but we do that. We can't rewind time. So it's the mistake has happened. So move on and then find another instance in time where you build the behavior that was lacking where the mistake happened. But Dr. Jesus Rosales Ruiz, he says the worst time to fix a mistake is when it happens. And that ties into this whole discussion as well of just resourcefulness. We are not very resourceful if we kind of stay stuck in the moment that just happened. But it's out of our hands anyway.
What you do have control over, I think that was your own. And I know what you think, Emily. I know you think this too.
Sorry, you're telling yourself about what I'm thinking is, yes.
is we do have control over our own, for a large majority of the time, behavior moving forward and the decisions and changes that we can make. And I think there's vulnerability and bravery at play there because you got to suck before you can be good at most things. Mm-hmm. And there's also creativity skills. One thing that I've leveraged is my understanding of the psychology, which might be completely wrong, that your mind needs to kind of fill gaps. So if something doesn't make sense, your mind will fill that gap with a story. Mm-hmm. It's like you're watching a television show and there's a cliffhanger. Like they're from my understanding of the psychology, which once again may be wrong, playing on your need to kind of fill that gap, and it creates a feeling of you. And I've leveraged this knowledge, ancestral belief, I can't confirm or deny, in my own thinking. So if there's a problem, I'll say, how can I fix this problem? And I'll just keep asking and asking and asking my brain. And my brain will find an answer. It's never failed me. Mm-hmm. And it'll come to me mm-hmm. while I'm having a shower or mowing the lawns. And then my brain's like, there is no answer. And I say, if there was an answer, no matter how small or insignificant that answer might be, what might that answer be? And then my brain will like go, oh, you got me thinking. So that's another behavior that I'm often cued in that context.
Yeah. Well, I think we talked about the label curiosity last time, and isn't that kind of being curious about keeping asking that question until there is something?
You changed my perspective on something, and you changed it so much I can't even remember it in the present moment. What was it?
It was your animal training, and you were feeling frustrated because you had time allocated. Yes.
And I changed frustrated and to curious.
Mm-hmm. Might as well. I mean, it might not. I mean, the other label I gave you could have been as incorrect as frustration, for all that I know. But at least it's more of a spin of it that makes me want to build things. So I'm like, I might as well try to reframe it into curiosity. And if it makes a difference, well, happy days. And if it didn't, keep asking.
I'm curious enough to have had tried it, and it's served me better. It's empowered me more than mm-hmm. using the word frustrated. Mm-hmm. It's got me curious as well about the infinite number of rabbit holes that we can continue to explore today. My environment's cueing me to go help wife. And my Audacity, which is the app I use to record my audio, is also cueing me to suggest that we start to wrap up, judging by the hour mark that my cursor has just moved past. So any final thoughts on overwhelm before we end up today?
If we take the, is it overwhelm in general or overwhelm when it comes to this online learning situation thing that we're talking about, or is it in general?
Let's stick to the online learning today.
Yeah, I think the answer is kind of, or the thoughts are kind of the same for either one. But the fact that system is not a dirty word, just make up your own, and it just approximate, make a little change for something that you can actually do. Check out if there is if you can filter after need, if it's for your own training, for clients, if it's for your own curiosity and learning. Maybe that will spark something in when you put things in. I often link things with things. So if I'm going to go train with friends and I have the opportunity to put in a session of listening to something that was for my own training just beforehand, that kind of piggybacks on each other. Think about this reframing of overwhelm from abundance, and think about the done for the day list. Make sure that at some time you are done.
Love it. And I love your list. And I think was that Josephine that was talking about that yesterday in our panel discussion? I can't remember.
About what? About
the done for the day list.
I don't remember either. I think I took it out from the comments in the session, but I really like the done for the day list. As a parent, as having my own business, as writing novels, I need a done for the day list. Otherwise, I'm never done. And never being done is like not lovely.
My final words are, think about one thing from this episode that you really liked. And if you identify, maybe not presently, but at times with the word overwhelm in your life, think about one small change that you might make moving forward.
I have one more final word. I will say, like Diana said, that was my next to last final word. But this is my final word. I want to say something about ATA. ATA to me is a community where I do not feel the whole, I should be contributing more. I don't get the guilt feeling, as I've had from so many other situations and communities that I have been in. I think we should honor and revel and love that fact that ATA, there is always someone willing to listen. And sometimes that someone is you, and sometimes that someone is somebody else. But ATA, actually, it's like, that Ryan, remember the time when both Eva and I brought up your name in the same thing? That is one of the reasons. ATA is a marvel.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I'm always like, thinking like, oh yeah, because I did this and this to create ATA. I haven't actually figured out what I did to create something that's amazing as you've just described to everyone. But I proudly think that I've done it with the help of 500-ish other people. It's definitely not just me. And yeah, I'm definitely reveling in it, definitely proud of it. And, you know, when I went through burnout, how did I get through burnout? A huge part of that was me using Animal Training Academy and being reinforced and getting support and getting ideas. So I think that to express gratitude to all of the ATA members as well, because they...
Just watch the fact that I'm actually posting. I do not post in community. And I share videos of Diana left, right, and center with the ATA right now.
And we appreciate it so much. But, I mean, that's such a huge compliment to say that. The antecedents are there and the reinforcers are there because your behavior is increasing in frequency, might I say.
Exactly. Exactly. It is, isn't it?
And we're grateful to you. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, now I also have a golden in here. It's a 3-year old. She's 3 years old today and she's telling me it's her birthday and I've been on the phone forever.
Well, let's wrap up there. But Emily, hey, some of the awesome stuff you're sharing is about some of the awesome stuff that you're sharing outside of ATA as well. And I know you've got I'm not sure how much or how little I can say, so I'll leave that up to you. But do you want to share with everyone before we jump off where they can go to find out what you're up to and connect with you online?
You can always find me on Facebook, Carpe Momentum, or Emily Johnson Vague. And you can watch me on Instagram, where I put most of my video content is actually on Instagram. And my nick is Emily Carpe.
Awesome. And we will link to all of that in the show notes. Emily, this has been ridiculously fun. I'm glad that we got to talk about this subject. I have visions of it really resonating with our audience based on the post that we've been talking about today in that Facebook group. I think it's a conversation people are wanting to have. So I'm grateful that you're the person that we had it with on the show. And I can't wait to get it out there and get feedback and create some ripples. We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.